Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Save up to $450 on a Gibson Les Paul Studio Deluxe, up to $900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad Pro 4, or save up to 20% on other select Gibson guitars. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, and welcome back to Locked On Pistons. This is Matt Shook, your new host of the show. This is actually my second podcast as host, and this is the pod for Tuesday, October 3rd, and we are now one day away from Pistons basketball. We're going to take you through all this season, but I'm hoping this forum will be as interactive as possible, so go ahead and hit me up on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, underscore after that as well, or on my Facebook fan page as well. That's right, the preseason slate begins on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time, at Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit against the Charlotte Hornets. Kemba Walker and Dwight Howard and company, really a team that will be possibly contending with Detroit for one of the final playoff spots in the Eastern Conference. And that's the same team the Pistons will be opening the regular season against on October 18th. These same Hornets will be coming back to downtown Detroit. And if you're itching to see these Pistons in action, the way to do it is to for Wednesday's game against Charlotte and also the next two home preseason games, which are consecutive home games, Friday night against Atlanta and then next Monday night against Indiana. Those games will be carried live to stream on Pistons.com and also FoxSports.com/Detroit. But if I were you, I'd suggest fans get down to the game. I mean, even for Wednesday's game, tickets are under $10 on SeatGeek right now. You can get two seats in the upper bowl for $7. And if it was me, I'd scoop those up just to check out the arena. I'll tell you what, it's a great conversation piece. I went to the first game ever. It was a preseason football game at Locust Oil Stadium in downtown Indianapolis to see Peyton Manning and the Colts take on somebody. I don't actually honestly remember who it was. Might have been the New York Giants. But my girlfriend at the time was living in Indianapolis, so we scalped tickets after the game started, $20 a piece, and checked it out. And let me tell you, every time I talk to someone from Indiana, I bring up that story, and they are always very impressed by that, as you can imagine. And know that that relationship did not last too long after that, too, by the way. So after Wednesday and the two other home games after that, the Pistons are going to hit the road for two road preseason games at Toronto and Milwaukee, wrapping up the five-game schedule. And then 2 weeks from Wednesday, like I said, October 18th against Charlotte, beginning of the regular season. So on today's pod, we're going to be talking about the venue, Little Caesars Arena, and some of the amenities that fans can expect, and also a little bit on some of the controversies that have come up over the really decades of the Ilitches acquiring the property to make the stadium, the Red Wings opening up their arena, and also the Pistons kind of coming in as the second tenant at the 11th hour in some ways. Then after that, we're going to do a general season preview where we answer a couple of the key questions as the team prepares to start the preseason. But let's get to the arena. What can you expect from the Pizza Bowl or LCA or whatever we end up calling it? I recently went on a YouTube wormhole and watched the ceremonies after the final game at Tiger Stadium from 1999. It reminded me that back then, I don't know if you remember this, but they were trying to make a big push to have Comerica Park be called the Copa at the time. I think the Tigers were trying to get in front of the fact that that corporate naming rights were a pretty new thing back then, and people might be sensitive to that. So they were trying to figure out creative ways to come up with a nickname to have people think it was a cool place. And of course, they came up with a nickname that brought to mind a Barry Manilow song for that. And it's hard to believe that one didn't stick over the years. But anyway, as far as LCA, the Ilitch family, they went through and bought up all sorts of land at the Cass Corridor and the surrounding areas downtown, which will now be making up the District Detroit area. Some of that land sat vacant for many years, and it really slowed down a lot of the economic progress that could have been happening on those lots in the midst of all the other development that's been going on down there these last couple of decades. You know, he's gotten some backlash for that. I think there's been some Deadspin stories about it. But the way I see it, it's kind of the reality of business on such a large scale that the Ilitches were doing down there. You couldn't have LCA or Little Caesars Arena or District Detroit if it weren't for some of that land acquisition over many years. And you couldn't go public with the plans too early, or some of those landowners would drive up the prices too much for the project to be sustainable. As it was, I know I've heard a lot of stories of business and landowners down there who did really well because of holding on to some of that land until the 11th hour. But the problem with it, and the biggest problem with the development, is that the Ilitches used a lot of taxpayers' money to fund the project. An old colleague and friend of mine, Bill Shea of Cranes Detroit, in the latest story I saw, had it as a $324.1 million price tag of public money to build the stadium, which came out to about $863 million, which was about double the original estimate of what the project will cost. When you talk about District Detroit, projections are that will be over $2 billion when the time comes for everything to be built through the years. It's really sickening to think about how the public is paying for a lot of this stuff, and there's just no way that the public should be paying for billionaire stadiums. I mean, I think it's pretty well-held thought these days for most fans, is that it's really not that big of an economic driver for downtowns. And really, if they're billionaires, they should be able to pay it for themselves. But, you know, it's not like the Ilitches were some of these worse owners over the years that we've seen in professional sports who are holding up a possible move to other cities or anything like that. And, of course, now you see me kind of rationalizing it. I heard an analogy once that sports owners are kind of like congressmen. Everyone hates sports owners as a whole, but then you kind of rationalize your own sports owner, and a lot of times you maybe like yours but hate the whole entity as a whole, just like everyone hates Congress. But for many years in Michigan, a lot of us, Democrats or Republicans, really didn't mind Carl Levin. We thought he was doing a great job down there. Of course, as time grows and owners become just, you know, billionaires with targets on their backs, and congressmen get worse and worse in the public eye, I think both of those analogies seem to be breaking down over time. But in the end, of course, I don't think anyone can argue that Mike Ilitch and his family have done a lot more good than harm to Detroit and Michigan in the long run. But as far as the arena goes, it sounds like a great place. You got the 6 premium clubs, 6 restaurants as well. You got the barbershop that everyone's talking about, the protective membrane atop the arena, the laser projection system that can show full motion videos on the arena and also in the surrounding area, calling what Tom Wilson says is going to be like a Times Square type atmosphere in downtown. One of the main interesting things is that the playing surface of the ice and the basketball court is going to be about 40 feet below street level. Some of the returns I've seen from Twitter and Facebook, some friends of mine and also some fans, is that the stairs are very steep in that arena. So be careful moving around that place if you've had a couple of drinks or a few drinks or a half dozen or a dozen drinks. The good news is that should create an atmosphere where fans are kind of on top of the action. So I think they kind of modeled that around Montreal's Forum that the Canadiens play in there. So should be nice and loud if the teams ever turn it around and turn into playoff contenders and championship contenders and whatnot. For those not afraid of heights, there's also the so-called gondola-style seating suspended above the stands. That sounds like kind of the same thing they used to have at the old Detroit Olympia Arena, some of those old shanty-type seatings that were up so high, supposedly up in the old Red Barn. My dad used to tell me stories about going up into those shanty-type seats up there, and they were not for the faint of heart. Of course, word of the Pistons' move downtown kind of came out of nowhere earlier this year. Little did we know that it was pretty much a done deal even at that time. But however, late as this summer, there was still a court case to block the move based on the extra $34.5 million the taxpayers were going to be kicking in to make the move suitable for the team on a basketball level. Some Detroit voters argued in court that there should be a vote to approve those funds, which would be siphoned through the Detroit Downtown Development Authority. However, in June, that got shut down in federal court, and now we're ready to play some basketball. Wanted to touch on a little listener feedback from the first episode that I did, where I ranked the top 5 memorable Pistons moments at the Palace. Twitter user Brishan Miller suggested that LeBron's outburst for Cleveland against Detroit was more worthy of a spot in the top five than Big Shot Bob in the finals from 2005. From a historical perspective, I can't argue with that opinion. Also, my brother Brian thought I was wrong to leave off Bill Laimbeer knocking down six threes in Game 2 of the 1990 NBA Finals against Portland. By the way, that would have been another memorable moment that involved the Pistons' loss, as the team won every game of that series but Game 2. So if you got any other thoughts on that or anything else from the show, again, reach out to me on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, underscore after that as well, and also on my Facebook fan page. But before we wrap up today, I'm going to play you guys a little clip I recorded the other day. There was a general season preview of the Pistons, just in case we have some new listeners or maybe some others who have been hibernating this past summer who might not be up to date with what's going on with the team after this offseason. The Lockdown Network did an NBA-wide preview where each of the hosts around the league did a short preview of their own teams and had some questions about the team that we cover to answer about them going into this season. So here's that. And we'll see you later on this week, everyone. Thanks for listening. Yes, sir! The biggest storyline for the team is going to be off the court at the beginning of this year. With Little Caesars Arena opening in downtown Detroit, it's going to be the first time the Pistons are playing in downtown Detroit in nearly 40 years. The facility is going to be shared with the Detroit Red Wings, and it's going to be part of the new District Detroit area, which is going to be connecting downtown and midtown in the Motor City. The reviews are pretty good so far, and fans like myself are going to be excited to check it out as the season goes on. As far as biggest storylines for the team, there's another off-the-court one that's going to impact the court play tremendously as the Pistons moved Marcus Morris to the Boston Celtics in a trade, acquiring shooting guard Avery Bradley and a second-round pick in the deal. Bradley has fans kind of reminded of those tenacious backcourts of the Pistons' past, which led to championships at the Palace of Auburn Hills. The move also meant that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope era is all done, as the organization renounced his rights and allowed him to sign a nice one-year deal with the LA Lakers, where he can kind of hopefully boost his stock a little bit and get that long-term deal as an unrestricted free agent next year. The Pistons, meanwhile, are a team with all sorts of questions, so let's get right to them. The best case scenario with the team has to pretty much involve Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson with some bounce back years and coming together offensively to form that nice pick and roll that they had 2 years ago. It was their best offensive weapon during that season, but with last year, Reggie was kind of out or hobbled when he was playing with that knee injury. It bogged down the offense and made it a lot harder for action to be happening and three-point shooters to get open looks. With the pick and roll coming back and being effective, those three-point numbers are going to obviously go up, especially since the additions like draft pick Luke Kennard in the first round and free agent signings Anthony Tolliver and Langston Galloway. Those guys are much better three-point shooters than the ones whose minutes they're going to be replacing. That being said, Tobias Harris did a really good job and performed admirably as the go-to scorer pretty much last year without that Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson effective pick and roll. But if Tobias Harris at this point in his career or any point in his career, if him creating shots is going to be your best offensive weapon, you're going to be a pretty limited offensive team in the NBA as we saw last year. Moving on to a worst case scenario, that has to do with Coach Stan Van Gundy. If he can't stay on the same page of his players, it's going to be a long season. He's coming into season 4 with the Pistons. And if things don't get better now for him, they may not ever get better with this core and Stan. And of course, it's preseason. Everyone's saying all the right things. Stan's always been brutally honest with his players. And at times that hasn't really sat well with Drummond as a young guy and also with Reggie Jackson's being kind of as emotional as we can see that he is as a player and as a person. And of course, we know about the problems that Stan had with Stanley Johnson last year. Again, with Stanley and Stan, everyone's saying all the right things in the preseason, but we'll see how that goes when some rough patches come throughout this year. As far as a player who might be thought of differently at the end of this season, it's going to be Avery Bradley. It's going to be interesting to see how he does, coming from being the second fiddle with the Celtics and Isaiah Thomas in that backcourt. And now he's in a situation where he's really the most accomplished NBA scorer on this roster. And he's got his free agency upcoming. Is that going to be a good thing or a bad thing for his career? We'll see on that. Is he going to embrace that role, lead the team in scoring, and answer the bell in big fourth quarter moments and decide that Detroit's the more he wants to stay in the long term? Or is he going to see that he's maybe just an defensive stopper and a complimentary scorer with some better guys around him, and maybe he'll find some of those superstars in the open market to play alongside next season? As far as a guy whose career trajectory might change a lot this season, either good or bad, I'm going to go with Stanley Johnson on that. He took a big step backward in his second year, but with Morris being gone from that forward spot, there's going to be more minutes for him available at that forward spot that's more comfortable for him. I think that's the biggest wild card of the season is Stanley. And what we think of Stanley next June will really be the whole story of how this Pistons season went. If he's a guy that we could see as possibly an all-star down the road, then maybe this Pistons season went really well. And, of course, the opposite, meaning that it didn't go so well once again. As far as rookies making impacts, it's basically just Luke Kennard. He was the first-round pick for them. Is he going to get the Stanley Johnson workload from 2 years ago, or the Henry Ellenson lack of workload from 1 year ago? He got the Duke pedigree, and Pistons filling the need for the shooter role with him. He should get on the floor some. He'll probably be with the big club for the whole season, but I only see him getting about 5-10 minutes a game possibly, especially because he's in a battle with Langston Galloway for those backup minutes at shooting guard. And if you see Galloway shooting the three like he did at the end of last season with Sacramento after the Boogie Cousins trade, I think Kennard's going to have a hard time finding regular minutes on the floor. As far as how the season's going to end, Las Vegas has the Pistons over-under at 38.5 wins. Now keep in mind, this is a team that went 37-45 last year and 44-38 the year before with largely the same core. And if you remember last year as a fan, you remember the malaise. You had the players-only meeting with Reggie Jackson when he came back. You had the unrest with Stan Van Gundy at times. And then the injury to Jackson as well. He's the catalyst of this team, and he had a rough go of it even when he was healthy. So I like the win total for this team to be a little bit closer than it was 2 years ago than last year. So I'm going to go with 43-39 as the record, and solidly in the playoffs in the weak Eastern Conference, maybe at the 6 or 7 seed. But I don't know. Maybe all the lockdown hosts are calling overs for their teams that they cover. But I actually think this is one of the safest bets on the board. As for the playoffs, I think the Pistons get in, and they're going to be another tough out like they were 2 years ago for Cleveland if they end up with Cleveland or Boston or Milwaukee or one of those contenders in the first round. I don't think they ultimately pull that upset, but it's going to be kind of a tough out for those teams with the tough defense that the Pistons play. It's an optimistic look that I have, but I think it's ultimately realistic as well. So you got season one of the Little Caesars Arena happening, and I think that for the fans, a return to the playoffs and some competitive basketball will probably be enough for them. So that'll do it for your Detroit Pistons season preview. Again, this is Matt Shook. You can catch me on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after that, or on my Facebook page. So thanks for listening, everyone. Mm-hmm.